It's Illume Group's Andrea Lay, Packed View's Melissa Burdick, the Wizard of Wooden Hill Shri, and I'm PVSB from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of April 22nd, and of course it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We found them boundlessly intriguing. We hope you do too. Brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com. It's retail right now. Leading off, Shri.
Thank you, Peter. And Amazon Live introduces a new shoppable ad-supported channel to Prime Video called Freevee, featuring 24/7 interactive content from celebrities and brands, leveraging its Shop the Show technology to enhance viewer engagement and boost its advertising revenue. At least that's the plan. The channel leverages Amazon's Shop the Show technology to enable viewers to easily purchase content seen on the TV screen via a mobile device. The CPG guys and I are excited to try this out, and we will report back how it performs back here in one of our blogs on the CPG guys. So I look forward to that. Over to you, Peter, for what's going on with Walmart Marketplace.
Thanks, Shri. Walmart Marketplace opens Omni service to auto sellers. Walmart is enabling customers to order eligible tires from Walmart sellers and have them shipped to a local Walmart store for easy installation at their auto care centers. Walmart sellers have added 12,000 unique items, including specialty tires, to provide nearly 40,000 marketplace offers that are installation eligible at 2,300 auto care centers around the country. The expanded tire selection complements Walmart's existing auto services that include accessories and battery services, while giving sellers more access to Walmart's omnichannel customer base. Over to you, Andrea.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Amazon begins offering Dash Carts to other grocers. Amazon has begun offering its Dash Carts to third-party grocers, expanding the checkout technology beyond Amazon grocery banners and Whole Foods market stores, according to a blog post from the company. Amazon introduces Dash Carts to non-Amazon grocery stores, starting with select locations in the Kansas City area. This rollout comes shortly after Amazon ceased its Just Walk Out technology in Amazon Fresh and Whole Foods. Customers using Dash Carts tend to spend 10% more, with over 80% of the transactions from repeat users, highlighting the cart's convenience and efficiency. Over to you, Melissa.
So Heinz has launched a new limited edition barbecue sauce. Heinz and Barbie lovers in Europe are in luck. A limited edition pink vegan mayo with barbecue sauce was launched to celebrate Barbie's 65th anniversary. Mattel and Heinz have unveiled the new Heinz Classic barbecue sauce. It will be available in the UK and Spain initially, and may be available elsewhere in the future. Additionally, there's 5,000 bottles of the new sauce available to purchase online, but they can only be shipped to the UK and Ireland. So for those of you in the US who are curious, you can do what I do and go to TikTok and search pink barbecue sauce, and you will find it.
Thank you, Melissa. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded. Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our hosts, Shri Rajagopalan, Peter V.S. Bolland, and Brian Gildenberg, explore how brands and retailers engage consumers in an increasingly digitally driven world. And now, here are the CPG Guys. Hello and welcome to the CPG Guys podcast, where we explore the omnichannel digital journey of brands and retailers. I'm your co-host, PVSB, and when I'm not podcasting, I'm the Partnership Acceleration Lead at Essential Digital Commerce. I'm joined today by my dear friend and co-founder of the CPG Guys podcast. I affectionately refer to him as the Wizard of Woodland Hills. Of course, I'm talking about my BFF, my ride or die, the man known as Shri. Shri, how are you? Has the rain stopped in Southern California yet? Are you drying out? What's going on?
It hasn't rained for a whole week right after I got my storm drains cleaned out, fixed my balcony, got the grade to be right. It hasn't rained for a whole week. California's back to drought conditions. How do you like that, Peter?
I absolutely love it. Now you can focus on your true passion, which is baseball. I know the Yankees are off to a winning record. I think they're, 5-2, unfortunately?
5-2.
Those pesky little Rays, Shri, they're undefeated and in first place. I'm sorry, but hey, it's 162 games. Lots of time to catch up.
Don't need to apologize, Peter. This is how last season started, and if I remember correctly, the Yankees were 53-18 at some point, so
There you go.
At the time of this recording, the Yankees are playing, and they're actually playing Baltimore at Baltimore, and the score is not looking good. It's 0-4, bottom of the fourth.
I love that you have the baseball game playing in the background. Okay, Sri. Well, let's get back to what we're really here for, which is our conversation. And those of you watching on video will notice that I am wearing some great gear. I've got my Albertsons Media Collective golf shirt and an Albertsons hat. That might be a slight indicator of the guest we have for today's episode. But before we get to our guest, I want to remind our audience to visit cpgguys.com, where you can find links to our podcast on all the major and minor platforms. And if you're not already doing so, please join the 21,000 other people who are following us on LinkedIn. That way, you can see all the new content. We publish content 7 days a week, brand new content. Very exciting. Everything from the CPG Bites to the Retail Media Minute, the Gildenburg Omnicomment, new episodes, and of course, the Fresh Four. And if you are on that site, you'll also find links to our other podcasts in the collective, the FMCG Guys, CPG Scoop, and of course, the newest edition, CPG Guys Fast Forward, starring our very own Brian Gildenburg. And of course, I would be remiss if I didn't mention how incredibly proud we are to be sponsors of Next Up, formerly Network of Executive Women, whose mission it is to advance all women in business and to promote gender equality in the workplace. The digital liner notes of this episode contain hyperlinks to our sites, the other collective podcast sites, our LinkedIn page, and of course, our landing page on Next Up. We are in the process of giving away 50 memberships to Next Up, which we as paying sponsors of the organization have been afforded. If you think that you are deserving of a membership, you're a female entrepreneur, maybe you're at a company that isn't currently a member of Next Up, reach out to us at contact@cpgguys.com. Let us know who you are, and maybe we can give you one of our 50 memberships. I think we've given away 15 or so far. We've got a lot more to go. This is a very worthwhile organization with tremendous educational resources and networking capabilities. Next Up is phenomenal. Please reach out to us, avail yourself of this incredible gift that we want to give you. All right, Sri, let's dispense with all the pleasantries and get down to the main event.
Let's go.
There we go. Retailers and brands alike are betting that one of the keys to sustainable growth centers around the concept of sustainability. ESG, which stands for Environmental Social Governance, is increasingly a core platform being promoted by leading retailers and the brands they sell through their omnichannel storefronts. In April of 2022, Albertsons Companies announced the launch of long-term goals and strategies focused on maximizing the company's positive impact across four pillars: planet, people, product, and community. The company's new ESG framework, called Recipe for Change, further solidifies Albertsons Companies' commitment to using its national presence and resources to drive meaningful, proactive change. Here to speak with us about Recipe for Change is Albertsons Chief Sustainability and Transformation Officer, who is overseeing execution of the overall ESG strategy and sustainability agenda. Please join Sri and me in welcoming to the CPG Guys podcast our friend Suzanne Long. Suzanne, welcome. How you doing?
I'm doing great. It's nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
We're very excited about having you on to talk about this incredibly worthwhile pursuit that Albertsons and so many other companies have undertaken. We're dying to hear all about what that means for Albertsons companies. Before we get to the questions we prepared for our conversation, why don't you share a little bit with our audience about your professional background that led you into your current role and what that role, responsibilities, encompass?
Sure. Well, I really started my career actually in consulting. I worked for Accenture straight out of college, doing change management and process improvement, mergers and acquisitions, technology integration. And within a few years, my husband and I wanted to move west. And so I actually left my position at Accenture and we moved to Boise, Idaho, where Albertsons, the old Albertsons, which is a story, probably a podcast in itself, it was based. And I actually did very similar work for Albertsons at that time that I had been doing for Accenture. So I was doing business improvement, looking at technology solutions. How could we improve our business processes so we weren't just automating inefficient ways of doing things? and also got the opportunity to build and lead a Lean Six Sigma program at Albertsons. The former CEO there had been at GE and had seen what Lean Six Sigma could do for a business and wondered if it could be used in the food and drug industry. So we were actually the first ones to build that program out, and it was incredibly fun and a huge portion of my career development, because all the projects that we did over 200 during my tenure of that program. And that's really where I learned the foundation of the business. I had grown up in retail, you know, my family had a small business, but I hadn't grown up in food retail. So that was sort of my education. And then we were acquired, and I ended up growing that program then under SuperValue. But then it became clear that I was going to have to move, which wasn't in the cards for me at that time. And so I ended up going back into consulting for a few years, leading a retail practice and helping other companies do exactly the type of work I had done at Albertsons around Lean Six Sigma process improvement. And then was invited back actually to the new Albertsons companies, which at that time was only 200 stores and $3 billion in sales. And we went on a buying spree. So we went and then bought back all the stores from SuperValue that had been sold just a few years prior. We purchased United Supermarkets in Texas. And then the big one was, that was when we bought Safeway. And so within 2 years, we grew from a 200 store, $3 billion company to being a 2,500 store, $65 billion company at that time. And my job became head of integration. So my job was to, I call it, stitch the company quilt together. So figure out how was everybody doing it? What was the way we were going to do it? And then sort of get the whole organization to move towards that. And a lot of gray hair later, we accomplished that goal within a few years. And then I sort of continued that same type of work, cost efficiency, finding better ways of doing things, until about 3 years ago, when our CEO not only tapped me to do strategic sourcing, which is all the goods we buy in our business that we don't sell to customers. Think of bakery ovens, shelf tags, gloves for service deli associates, the bags we put your groceries in, all of those items we spend money on. So I was doing that and trying to source those as well as we possibly can. But he also asked me, would I lead our ESG strategy and build out that capability? And so about a year later, I was actually stepped into the role to be our first Chief Sustainability and Transformation Officer. So that's sort of the trajectory of my career. And so what you can tell is, you know, it's been really mostly about process improvement and making positive change in whatever business I happen to be in. And in the last couple of years, that's really moved into the space of sustainability. And the way I would describe it is, because when you're doing sustainability right, it actually is great for business. And so it's very much in line with the background I've always had. It's just the metrics of what we're trying to achieve are a little bit different.
Brilliant. What a great career arc. I think it has positioned you very well for understanding all the elements of how a retail operates. So this is just a great story. We're going to include in the digital liner notes of this podcast episode a link to Suzanne's LinkedIn profile, to Albertsons companies on LinkedIn, and since we're going to be talking about ESG during this episode, the most recent ESG report that Albertsons has published, so you get an understanding of detail as to the kind of work that they're doing. So with that, I think we'll get to the questions we've prepared. I'm going to kick it off first, and Sri will follow. This is a real layup for you, I think, at this point, Suzanne. What does the acronym ESG stand for, and why is it important from your perspective for companies to get invested in building ESG plans?
Well, I think it's a great question because, to be honest, when I was first asked to step into this space, I was asked what our ESG strategy was, and I had to Google what is ESG. So it was not a term that I was terribly familiar with at the time. But of course, once I looked into the definition, I clearly understood immediately that it's really a broader definition of what so many of us think of as sustainability, corporate social responsibility, or other acronyms that have been used over time. So what ESG stands for is environmental social governance. The E, the environmental, is all about, think of our planet. So that's the land we live on, the air we breathe, the water we drink. When you think about the S, think social, think everything having to do with people. That could be everything from diversity, equity, and inclusion to safety, human rights, fair labor practices. There's a number of topics in that sphere. And then the G is governance. It's all about the systems and processes and requirements we have for actually executing and doing the right thing. So that could be, for example, a law that says you can't throw food waste into landfill. It could be food safety practices that keep people from getting sick. It could be data privacy laws that say you have to protect healthcare information of consumers. And it can also be things like board structure, to making sure that the way a company is held accountable for the decisions it makes, that structure is in place. So it has a very, ESG has a very broad definition. And that sort of gets to when somebody says, you know, we have an ESG strategy. The thing is, there are so many topics you have to care about, you know, just to run a business. There are literally dozens of topics we have to care about in ESG as a grocery company, just for you to walk in the doors of our store, right? You're not going to give us extra credit for not making you sick. You expect that. You expect to be safe. You expect us to be keeping our people safe. You expect us to be good stewards of the planet and our community and not putting excess waste into the world. So there are many things you expect of us, and you should as a grocery company. But we had to think about what were the places where, as such a large company, we could be a leader, right? That it wasn't just the criteria through which you're willing to walk in our doors, but that we could look ourselves in the mirror as a company and say, we are helping to lead our industry, our consumers, our suppliers towards a North Star. And so we actually had to go through a process to figure out what that North Star was. And I know we're going to be talking more about that, but it really centered on four areas. Climate action, and that's all about energy and emissions. Waste reduction and circularity, which is all about food waste and plastics and packaging. Diversity, equity, and inclusion. And that's, yes, for our associate base, but it's also when we think about our customers and the diversity of our customers, as well as how well we're supporting diverse suppliers. And then last, but certainly not least, is community stewardship. And that's really all about hunger. And so rather than try to talk about ESG, which sounds like alphabet soup and makes everybody else have to go to Google and say, what is ESG? We have framed this all in what we call recipe for change. And so when you hear us talk about our ESG strategy, those four things I named are our ingredients, and we have our recipe for change to play the leadership role we should because of our size and scale.
Thank you so much. And ESG, I think at the surface level, may and probably sounds like alphabet soup, but very clear now. It's governance shouldn't be a one-way street. It should be a two-way street, a part of the accountability as well. So what's the history behind sustainability at the Albertsons companies? Why did the need to get into governance and hold yourselves accountable come up in the first place? And then, Suzanne, how did you become the chosen one?
Well, let me take the first part, and then, because I think I might have to think about the second part of it. Well, for the first part is, you know, we had been in the sustainability space for a long time. You know, if you went into our grocery stores literally for decades, right, we do everything from recycled cardboard or plastic film. We donate to our communities. We take care of the safety of our associates. We're looking out for sustainable ingredients, making sure that you have choices when you walk in our stores for the type of products and values that you're purchasing against. So there are so many things that we were already doing. But if you asked us, I'll call it, who did we want to be when we grew up, right? What was our North Star? That was what we couldn't answer. We didn't have, for example, a specific recycling goal. We didn't have a specific carbon reduction target we were looking for. And so the question was, we have to be good at all of this. But where do we want to show real leadership? And so by answering that question, it gives us internally a North Star to say, this is who we want to be as a company. But it also gives others the opportunity to look at us and say, do I believe as a big business that Albertsons is helping play its role out in the world and sort of, you know, I'll call it throwing our weight around a little bit for the greater good, right? And that could be from making it cleaner air, less waste, better social practices to make people feel more included, making sure people aren't hungry. You know, we can do a lot of good in the world. So that was really the impetus behind it. But I will tell you, I have four letters that I like to use for this. Talk about alphabet soup, right? So the first one is C for customers. So customers, consumers are looking for companies to be strong in this space. They want to know that you're not just in it for the short term, that you're in it for the long term. You're looking out for the good of your communities as well as them as consumers. And they're willing to not only buy more at companies that they feel are living against such values, but in some cases pay more for products that they feel meets those values that are important to them. That is especially true for millennials and Gen Z. So as we look forward, consumers are the primary reason to do this, is that we need to make sure we're meeting what they expect of us. The second thing is we have associates. We have 290,000 associates that work for us, and they want to work for a company that cares about something bigger than itself, that cares about the larger communities in which we live. And they want to feel connected to those communities. So it's also about making them not feel transactional, but that they are connected to something larger that we're delivering. The third letter, okay, right, is our investors, the I. Because investors know that companies that care about these types of issues and work towards them actually perform better in the marketplace. I mean, there's a reason that there are such thing as green investing. And like I said, everything we're doing in our business that's around our goals is actually good for our business as well. So there's the I. And then if none of those things compel you, then I will tell you that the last piece will, because the last letter is R, the regulators. So if the consumers, your employees, or your investors don't convince you, the regulators will make sure you're interested, because they're going to put rules and regulations in place that hold you accountable. And so it feels to me like a spectrum of lean in because it's the right thing to do and because your consumers are pulling on it, all the way to the spectrum of being told you have to do it. And we want to be on the front end of that, not on the back.
That makes a lot of sense.
Now, in terms of how I got into this, it was really all about this business improvement, right? Is that my background was all about how do we take waste out of our business? How do we make ourselves better operators? And when we think about ESG, when we think about our recipe for change, it is all about improving our operations. So it's everything from reducing the amount of energy we use, which is great for carbon reduction and good for our bottom line. It's about eliminating food waste going to landfill. Well, that's great for our business. It eliminates the amount of waste that we're actually creating, right, within our financial waste, right, shrink. But it's also reducing the amount of food waste going to landfill, right? It's getting rid of those methane emissions that are some of the strongest contributors to carbon. It's things like donating to our communities and making sure that people aren't hungry, to show that we are good stewards of the communities that take care of us by shopping in our stores. So all of the tenets in which we operate are not only about driving ourselves towards being leaders and good stewards, but it's actually good for business. And so I think because of my background, I sort of fell backwards into this. And I can just tell you that, you know, I feel like it was so serendipitous, and I feel so fortunate to be put in a role where I can have a change greater than myself, that we could actually drive something that's what the world needs to see from businesses like ours.
That's tremendous, Suzanne. So sustainability, from my perspective, is a very big and encompassing concept, as you detailed in your first response. So how did you actually go about determining what specific areas of focus would be included in Recipe for Change? Like, I have to imagine you did some due diligence to figure out, like, where are the biggest areas of waste? And when developing the framework, how did you also include the needs of your shoppers, your associates, and your suppliers in crafting this recipe for change?
So we went through a process that's called a materiality assessment. And this is sort of the way, it's a standard way of looking at how do you take a lot of topics and figure out which ones are most materially important and critical for you to get after. And so we took the dozens of things we have to care about, right? Everything from carbon emissions, animal welfare, water stewardship, health and safety, sustainable ingredients, all of these different topics. And we actually went out to all of the stakeholder groups I was just talking about a minute ago, right? We went out to our customers, to our associates, to our investors, to regulators and industry experts. And we actually had them tell us, which of these topics do you think are most important for us to focus on? And we actually plotted that out and then worked with our senior leadership team, so our CEO and his direct reports, to say, we need to figure out which are the most important topics for us to show leadership. And that was how we landed on the four. So again, it's not that we ignore the rest. It's that the four where we set leadership level ambitions and created our recipe for change, those are the four I talked about, which are climate action, waste reduction and circularity, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and community stewardship. And then what we did is we said, okay, what are others doing in this space? So benchmarking ourselves against what kinds of commitments are we seeing other leaders make? And then where can we set our ambition to maybe be tip of the spear, maybe just be in the leadership group, right? Or in some cases, carve entirely new paths forward. And so we set then very clear goals for ourselves, most of which have a 2030 completion date, one of which has a 2040. So just to give you an illustration, we have committed to zero food waste going to landfill by the year 2030. We have committed to reduce the emissions from our own operations by 47% by the year 2030. And actually, the 2040 goal is to be net zero in our operations. We've committed to enabling 1 billion meals by 2030. And all of these have a baseline of 2019. And what's been so powerful about this is by creating that North Star, watching the energy of the organization rally behind it and say, how are we going to get there? And the craziest part about this, it's the craziest part of sustainability to me, is I can't name any other part of our business, of any business, even my life, where somebody says, tell me exactly where you're going to be in 2030 and how you're going to get there. But that is exactly what we ask people to do in the world of sustainability, set these big, audacious, way far out there goals, and then tell them how we're going to get there. And that has been the most fun part of my job, is sort of rallying, you know, this whole organization to go in that direction and seeing the passion that people have to do it.
How awesome to have specific goals on each of your planks, as you described, whether it be diversity, equity, inclusion, whether it be community stewardship, to waste regulation, as well as climate action. That creates accountability both for you at the Albertsons companies and everyone you choose to partner with in a variety of forms. So can you give us details on the four pillars that you've just started describing here, and as you've settled for your recipe for change? And then I want to connect them back to science. How is science determining these metrics you arguably started getting into already here that you're starting to describe?
Sure. So let's take them one at a time. And so for climate action, for example, I mentioned we have this 47% reduction goal in our own carbon footprint. And then we have this 2040 goal of being net zero in our own operations. And I use that language very specifically because when you think about a grocery store, we are part of a food system, right? So there is food manufactured, grown upstream of us. And then we're sort of big boxes that product flows through to be consumed downstream of us. So we're sort of in the middle of that food system, right? And so when you think about what our carbon footprint is in I'll call it within our operations, it's within the distribution centers where that product comes to and operating those distribution centers, the trucks that go from those distribution centers to our stores, and then operating our stores. And then, of course, from our stores, it's going out to be consumed by our customers, right? And so when I say our operations, it's when it comes to our distribution centers between there and the time it leaves our stores, that's within our operations. So that's what I'm referring to, because we have direct control over that. So that's the 47% reduction. And the two things that make up the majority of that are refrigerants and energy. So I think if I ask the average person, and even going into this and sort of doing the science, doing the math to your point, Sri, when we did that, I assumed that the trucks that shuttle our groceries around from place to place was going to be a huge part of our footprint. But it's only 3%. 3%. So if we electrified our entire fleet, it would actually, and it takes actually electricity to electrify a fleet, so you wouldn't even get the full benefit of reducing the 3%, but it would only move the needle 3%. I got to move it 47%. So the two things that make up the majority are actually refrigerants and energy, right? Think of all the refrigeration in a grocery store. Think of the lights, right? The power, the point of sale, the bakery ovens, you know, the refrigeration that's everywhere. Those are the things that are causing the majority of our carbon footprint. And so we've taken direct action to actually reduce. That makes 86% of our footprint is made up of those two things. So that's where we're focusing that reduction. And just to give you an example, between 2019 and 2021, we reduced our carbon footprint by 19%. And it's by doing things like putting doors on refrigerated cases, putting in LED lighting. It's the same thing you would do in your house that your mother taught you when you were five. Turn off the lights. Don't leave the refrigerator door open. Close the door when you come in from the cold. It's the logical stuff. But when you get into 2,300 stores and millions of customers and hundreds of thousands of employees, it's easy to forget some of the basics, right? So that's the climate action. And we've set very specific goals. And actually, our goals are approved by what's called SBTI, the Science-Based Target Initiative. And that means that our goals are indicative of we are doing our part in the world to keep global warming below 1.5 degree increase above pre-industrial time. So those are approved goals. And then the other thing we have to do is get our CPG partners, our top 250 CPG partners, to actually sign up for their own science-based targets. So all of this is part of this goal. So it's sort of when you know, it's sort of turning over a rock and then a bunch of stuff crawls out. Well, that's sort of what's happening here is for each one of these rocks we've turned over, you know, there's a bunch of activity we have to do. So to quickly take you through the other three, on our waste reduction and circularity, we've committed to zero food waste going to landfill, as I mentioned. And so literally now the process becomes A, putting processes in place to just immediately start reducing food waste going to landfill. That could be, you know, better donation programs, programs to divert food waste from going to landfill and putting it into compost. So we want to do that. But then we got to start measuring the food waste that we have and figuring out how are we going to incrementally in big jumps reduce that, right? So much to unpack there. And then we also have our plastics and packaging related to our own brand's products that we have to manage. And so again, using science, we've actually established what is our plastics and packaging baseline. So now we can start actively taking steps to improve that, the compostability, the recyclability, the reusability of the own brand's products that we use. In the area of diversity, equity, inclusion, we use our statistics of what we know our makeup of our population to be, and we use an engagement survey to understand inclusion and belonging rates. And then last but not least, on community stewardship, we actually measure the pounds and dollars that we donate towards hunger relief and measure that in meals or meal equivalents to show what we're enabling in our community. So in all of these cases, we're using data and science and, you know, legitimate ways of tracking to try and make sure that when we say we're going to hit a goal, that we have a way of actually validating we've achieved it.
I'll remind our audience that Sri and I are speaking with Suzanne Long, Chief Sustainability and Transformation Officer at Albertsons Companies. Wow, Suzanne, so much here. And I know Sri's going to give us a good recap at the end. I know you've probably got a stat in there about how many miles of refrigerant piping you've got across all your stores. What is it? I think we talked about this in a prior conversation.
You're exactly right. Great memory. Yeah, we literally have, I mean, it varies by the size of the store, but in every store, we have miles and miles of refrigerant piping. So the way refrigeration works, nobody thinks about, you know, I never thought about this before I got into this in the grocery business. You know, walk in your mind's eye into your local grocery store, right? And now start thinking about shopping each of the departments. So You're going over to the service deli and there's refrigeration there, and you're going over to the bakery and there's refrigeration there, and the meat department, refrigeration, center store, beverages, right? Even in pharmacy, the front end, there is refrigeration everywhere. And the thing about refrigeration is it's supposed to be a closed loop system. The gases, the refrigerant that we put in those systems is supposed to stay in that system. But like any pipe that's in your house, sometimes there are leaks, right? And so when those leaks happen, that refrigerant gets out into the atmosphere. You can't see it. You can't smell it. You don't even know it's happening. But those refrigerants are bad for the environment. And so when we say that we have to improve refrigeration, what we have to do is use refrigerants that are better for the environment or have no impact in the environment when they do leak. And we have to reduce the amount of them that we're leaking. And so those types of things are the kinds of things we're looking at as a business. Now, you as a vendor or someone as a consumer might never see us doing the work on that, but it's crazy how sometimes the things that we don't see are the things where we can drive the greatest improvement. And that's what bringing science to the way we've been, the way we're looking at this, using Lean and Six Sigma type of tools and analyses has actually helped us to uncover the problems we didn't even know existed that were causing the greatest amount of harm.
So I'm going to jump a little bit more. You started mentioning it in the question three, but you started mentioning the involvement your suppliers have, and then your partnership with the entire industry to drive meaningful and sustainable change to improve our communities. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you are getting those two valuable parts of your ecosystem involved and actually achieving scale through them?
Our CPG partners have, they're seeing the same thing in the marketplace that we're seeing, that consumers are moving in this direction, that employees are looking to work at companies that care about this, right? All the same things we talked about before. So the amazing thing about being in this space is how much collective push there is towards this. This isn't, Albertsons pushing a rope uphill, which I think is how many companies felt for a long time who were, early into this space and really had their strategy. I think they felt like they were trying to push it. Now there's this tremendous pull. And so CPG companies are seeing that as much as anyone, because Albertsons Companies isn't the only one with those kinds of goals, right? I mean, our competitors, our biggest competitors also have similar goals. And so you're seeing sort of this collective push of retailers and CPG companies alike to really set ambitious goals and make progress against them in this space. So when we go and have conversations with our CPG partners, in the last year, sustainability and ESG has gone from something that was never talked about to being one of the first things and most exciting things that people are talking about, because it pushes the envelope of innovation. Not only what is the type of plastics and packaging you're putting your goods in, but are you being a good steward of the planet in the way you're producing your goods to begin with? Right? It changes the nature of the conversation, and it creates a whole new body of innovation that can drive consumers to new products, new opportunities. So it's really exciting engaging CPGs on this. And the other thing is, you can't talk about this topic and have people feel sad. I mean, you can feel sad about maybe the state of where things are, but the opportunity of where they can go, this is a cup filler for so many people and companies. Like, there's so many things that will drain you that make you feel like, oh, I do not want to put my feet on the floor today. But when you feel like I'm going to take some carbon out of the air or some plastic out of landfill or feed a hungry family or make somebody feel more fulfilled in their job because we were connected to our communities, those are reasons to put your feet on the floor, right? When you get out of bed in the morning, it's a cup filler for so many people.
So, Suzanne, why don't we shift from vision to outcomes? I'm sure you have some great stories to share with our audience about some of the Recipe for Change projects you've implemented and the results that have come out of them. So dazzle us away.
Sure. Well, this is the part of the story I'm most proud of because, goals are just goals until you achieve them. Right. Action is where this is all going to make a difference for all of us, both in our business and our profitability, but also just in the communities we serve. Right. And so, for example, in our climate action, as I mentioned, we've already reduced our carbon footprint by 19% between 2019 and 2021. And in the next few months, we'll actually have the results of 2022 because our fiscal year just ended. So we have to get in our energy information and refrigerant information to be able to do those calculations. So that'll be coming out this summer. But I expect to see a continued improvement in that carbon footprint. And we have such a great commitment by our board and our executives to continue to invest capital and our collective energy to driving down those numbers. It's really incredible being a part of those conversations. Then in the area, for example, of food waste, we have put in place in the last 6 months one of the most innovative food donation programs that I think is in the industry, certainly in the US. So it used to be that people felt that they could only donate shelf-stable products or bakery products. Well, we went out there and we worked with food safety and we worked with regulators and we worked across the industry to say, can we donate meat, for example? Can we donate produce? And the answer was yes. There are Good Samaritan laws that protect us from having concerns about, you know, is, you know, would there be concerns about donating those types of things? And I love that there is legislation that does that because it takes off, you know, concerns and handcuffs. And food is so perfectly safe, even when it hits its sell-through date, that there's so much food that can be frozen, for example, like meat at home, right? If you bought it on the sell-through date, you stick that sucker in the freezer, time stops for that piece of meat, right? We just need to do the same thing to be able to donate it to local food banks and organizations. So that's the kind of program we've rolled out. So now you can donate service deli items. We can donate meat, seafood, produce. You know, every department in our store is able to donate. And that has just really opened up people's eyes also to the amount of stuff that, you know, maybe was going to composting or landfill that actually can go into someone's belly. So we're really proud of that program. And we have over 90% of our stores at this time participating in that program. And we expect to be at 95% in just the next couple of months. You can imagine we'll always have a few stores that will struggle because they're in such remote locations that in some cases, the food that they would like to donate just doesn't have a good landing spot to be donated. So anyway, so much progress in that space. And then in the billion meals category, for example, we have already donated hundreds of millions of meals and enabled hundreds of millions of meals, both through direct food donation and through financial donation. And so, you know, I think we're going to creep up on that one very, very quickly here and maybe even have to raise the bar on ourselves.
So much fun in the process as well. You know what I'm thinking, Peter? Listening to Suzanne, our audience is going to want to know how they can participate and contribute to Albertson's Recipe for Change, your Recipe for Change. So can you share with our audience how that's possible?
I love that question because I do think people want to know, hey, I want in on the fun. I want in on the good stuff, you know. So there's a number of ways. First of all, one of our big pushes this year is we've launched Recipe for Change, but we need to really bring it to life for our own employees. For our own organization, we need to make sure that they know how that they can get engaged because that also helps them when the customer comes in and talks to them about, tell me about your recipe for change. They know what the heck they're talking about, right? So if we have 300,000 or nearly 300,000 people, we have to make sure that they understand it first. So we're doing a lot of work in that space right now. But in terms of, you know, the everyday consumer or Albertson's company's customer, and that could be a Jewel customer, a Shaw's customer, an Acme customer. I mean, we operate under 22 different names. So many people don't even know they're shopping with Albertson's companies, right? Because they're, you know, with their local Jewel or Vaughn's or Randall's or any of those stores. So a couple ideas that come to mind are, first of all, we have in many of our stores recycling programs for things like plastic film and grocery bags. And so if you're someone who just can't seem to remember your reusable grocery bag, I have finally gotten myself into the habit. I always remember mine now. But if you're somebody who doesn't do that and you hate having those in your home and thinking you can't do anything with them, they can be recycled in many places in our stores. So that's a very simple example. The second example I would give is that I would say buy against your values. You know, purchase the products that are important to you and your value system, because that's how we get signals of where consumers are going, right? As consumers buy products that match their value system, whether that's sustainable ingredients, companies that are doing their part for regenerative agriculture, looking for organic products. When you buy those products that are match free, we look at that and we say, huh, looks like we need to provide more of those because that's what our consumers care about. The last thing, and this is the one I think is so fascinating as a consumer, is we look at code dates on products as a safety issue, not as a quality. Okay. And so, for example, you'll notice that even the language on different packaging varies, right? Sometimes it's best by, best if used by. Sometimes it'll say expired, EXP, right next to it. But the language varies tremendously. Sell through, sell by. And part of the reason for that is there really isn't regulation around this. And I'm not suggesting that regulation is the answer. What I would tell you is that code dating actually started in a completely opposite way of how we view it. Okay. It actually started as a way of indicating manufacturing dates, not dates by which the product should be consumed. And over time, because of an evolution in that, people have started to perceive that the dates on products are an indicator of if I eat it past that date, it is no longer food safe. And that is just simply not true. And so you need to be an informed consumer. But I can tell you that I have in my fridge, I'm embarrassed to admit this, I have yogurt that is, I think, 4 months past its code date. Now, it's a cultured product. It smells and tastes perfectly fine, right? I can tell you, I can do the sniff test and the taste test and know that product is perfectly fine. There is no harm to me by consuming that product, okay? We need to know that because the majority of waste in our country actually comes from consumers purchasing something that they can't finish in their house and throwing it away. And we want you to buy every single product from us that you possibly can. And when you need to refill your fridge, we want to be your go-to company. But I also want to make sure that we're not putting food waste in landfill that doesn't belong there. And so I would just tell you, do a little research on code dates, and then maybe rethink whether there's anything you could be doing different in your house to waste less food.
Sounds like a little education on all our parts will make us better consumers and will help contribute to this goal of sustainability. I want to remind our audience, please stop by cpgguys.com. You can find all of our content. It's all free. And if you think that your company or you have some thought leadership to contribute to our community discussion, drop us an email at contact@cpgguys.com and maybe you can join us on a future episode of this podcast. And don't forget, while you're at cpgguys.com, on the navigation bar at the top, there's a section for ratings and reviews. Give us a rating. Give us a review. Let us know what you think. Let us know the kinds of people that you want to have on the podcast to talk about topics, because that's what drives the content we create and the people we invite on. And of course, as always, thank you, thank you, thank you to the 21,000 plus dedicated, loyal LinkedIn followers who make this community as powerful as it is. Wow. Suzanne, you delivered beyond our expectations in today's conversation, really getting into the nitty gritty of sustainability, what it means to Albertsons companies, how suppliers can get involved, how consumers can get involved. We cannot thank you enough for opening our eyes to this critically important directive that is helping to influence the communities we live in. Thank you for joining us today. We're greatly appreciative.
Thank you so much for having me and helping me get the message out.
All right, Sri, I know that you've been feverishly taking notes, and I don't know how you're going to summarize it, because it's not like she came with a lot of fluff. There was a lot of detail in that. So you've got your work cut out for you. Why don't you give us some highlights from Suzanne's conversation with us today? I know I see quite a number of note pages. The floor is yours, my brother.
Thank you, Suzanne, for joining us. Thank you, Peter, of course. I'm going to start right up top with Suzanne describing her career. I cheated a little bit because I had a pre-conversation with Suzanne already, so I've taken some notes from there as well. Number one was she comes from a background of process design, change management, M&A, consulting. Can you get a better person to move the earth on this? And then somewhere in there, she made a very important statement, which I'm going to state right up front. The soul of Albertsons are the people who work in store. And when they get involved, they want this is going to happen. We started then starting to, why is this important? Accountability is a very important piece of this for the board. And ESG accountability in particular is now a metric that's being measured. I'm going to get into some of those metrics in a bit. Why is it important? Very simple, because consumers are going there already. Employees care. That's what I describe the people that who work in store, the soul of Albertsons. And of course, investors care. Albertsons has been in the space a while, originally a lot of activities, but 3 years ago actually became a strategy. And that's how Suzanne got plugged into it as the leader of that strategy. And I've already declared, hey, what better person with that background to lead something like this? Because this is big change. You talked about doing an assessment from associates, investors, customers, feedback, and put ESG in the mix. And that's how your four pillars emerge. What are those specific four pillars? Climate action, waste regulation, and circularity around this, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and community stewardship. Very distinct goals in each one of those spaces. Number one on the climate action side, so I'm meeting international standards. Refrigerants, which I was surprised to learn is a greater participant in carbon emission than fleet and trucks, which I would have thought is number one. 47% reduction by 2030. By the way, folks, you blink and 2030 is here. The second one on the waste regulation piece is a zero food waste program to landfill. Again, 2030 benchmark. On the DE&I side, picking suppliers that actually participate in this and have shared objectives and are willing to participate in shared objectives. Also, engagement and inclusion metrics of these suppliers. And then lastly, in the community stewardship, 1 billion meals by 2030. And all of these are benchmarked against 2019. So very ambitious goals. An awareness that carbon footprints include suppliers, partners, et cetera, and therefore working with your top 250 suppliers to be able to set science-based targets. We talked about the science a little bit, but for all of you listening in, check out SBTI, the science-based targeting, and what they stand for. These are the most fun part of this entire episode. So remember what your mom said. Turn off the lights in 5 minutes. If it's not required, turn it off. I certainly practice that heavily. I argue about that with my family all the time at home. They leave all the recess lighting on all the time. They leave it on overnight, and I don't like that whatsoever. So you know what I did, Suzanne? I worked with ADT to automate everything. And now they will turn off, and no one even knows because it's late at night. Then we talked about keeping carbon footprint below 1.5. And again, folks, go to SBTI and figure out what that means. And then why would your CPG partners want to be part of this, the top 50? Because, of course, they're dealing with the same consumer. Their employees care and are actually ready for this. And you call it a cup filler. And what a great way to achieve this, you pointed out, one great way, innovation. Shoot for the moon and land it on Earth. How do you like that one, Suzanne? Land it on good Earth.
I love it.
And yeah, I love the terminology. It's a cup filler for many. Then we asked you right at the end, if our audience wants to participate, how can they? Congratulations on starting the recycle plastic bag program. You can turn it into Albertsons. Buy products that actually adhere to some of these standards. And then we had quite a good discussion with you on code dates and what they mean, safety versus quality, things of that nature. But the reality is each family has to determine for themselves. But look at those dates and really ascertain whether the drop dead date, when it's expired, do you really have to throw it in the landfill, or is there an opportunity to freeze it earlier and therefore actually freeze those dates, is the exact word you said, and not have to go to the landfill just because there's a printed date. Fun episode, lots of learning, but more importantly, I would say this is called performance with purpose, a word that I learned during my days at Frito. And it's always very heartening for Peter and me when we can have performance with purpose episodes. Thank you, Suzanne, for what you do for Albertsons, for our planet, for our people, the community, and for driving, most importantly, performance with purpose. How did I do, Peter?
I'll turn to Suzanne. How did he do? Did he get it?
I think you did fantastic. I have to say, I think you're summarizing that better than most people I could think of who've been working on it for a very long time. So that was fantastic.
I cheated. I was paying attention.
I also have to tell you, listening to you recount it to me and then getting a chance to be on your show, this has been a real cup filler for me.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Thank you. We're honored to have you as a guest. And to our audience, we're going to include in the digital liner notes of this podcast As I said, Suzanne LinkedIn profile, Albertsons companies on LinkedIn, but also the most recent ESG report that Albertsons has published, so you can dig into the details of everything that Suzanne has been talking about. Sri, as always, thank you for joining me on the podcast. To our audience, thanks again for coming along on this journey. We look forward to speaking with you on the next episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Goodbye. The content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.